take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, July 13th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. Coming to you live from beautiful legal potland, Oregon. But today's show is dedicated to our friends north of the border. Today is our All Canada show, eh? So we're going to get some great Canadian activists on today's show. I've taken the final panel from the Cannabis Hemp Expo that took place in Vancouver, British Columbia this weekend. It was an all-star panel of Canadian activists, and it was moderated by Jamie Shaw, herself a great activist up there in Canada. And on the panel were Jody Emery, the Princess of Pot, who's done such great work over the past 5 or 6 years. We also had on the panel Mark Hayden. He is a researcher in Canada who brought a lot of the science to the panel, so that was good to see. We'll also hear from Dana Larson from Sensible BC. He's the overgrow the government guy. He's also written numerous books, including Harry Pothead, and I forget what the subtitle of it is, but Harry Pothead and Green Buds and Hash instead of Green Eggs and Ham. So he's on the panel as well. You'll also hear from Mark Emery, the Prince of Pot, who is back in Canada after his 5-year prison sentence in the United States. And you'll hear from lawyer Kirk Tusaw, who has argued in front of the Canadian Supreme Court and brought some legal perspective to the panel. We've broken it up into 5 parts today, so we'll play 2 of these parts in hour 1, starting at 1:30, and then in hour 2, we'll play the other 3 parts for you. But in addition to our all-star Canadian activism panel, we've got some other stories to get to today. In our Cannabusiness Chronicles today, we're going to take a look at the sales figures for recreational and medical marijuana in the state of Colorado. After just 5 months, they've reached a milestone and continue to shatter records. So we'll take a look at that right after the Cannabis Radio News. And I'm going to move up the radical rant to earlier in the show today because there's been some news about an outbreak of synthetic pot in Brooklyn, New York. 33 people falling out, being described as pot zombies and taken to the emergency room. So we're going to talk a little bit about the synthetic pot epidemic and the obvious solution to it that people in New York's leadership still don't want to have to address. But all that comes after the Cannabis Radio News. And in the headlines today, we've got a response from the Republican Party on whether or not medical marijuana should be legalized. We've got the Arizona initiative for legalizing marijuana under attack from its opponents that includes some DAs and sheriffs. We've got some research coming out of Berlin, Germany, telling us just how long human beings have been using cannabis hemp and how it may have helped to develop trade routes in the Bronze Age. We've got news from Montana, where the medical marijuana cardholder fee has dropped extremely low. We'll tell you just how low, just how cheap a medical marijuana card is in Montana now. In Maryland, we've got some news on their burgeoning medical marijuana system and the upcoming announcement of licenses that will be issued in Maryland. And we've got news from Hawaii, some changes to the Hawaiian medical marijuana program to clue you in on, and a new graphic coming out of Washington State to warn kids about edible pot products. All that coming up on the Russ Belville Show, live from Potland, Oregon. Thanks for joining us here exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earth. earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
CannabisRadio.com keeps you in the know Monday through Friday on air and on demand with Cannabis Radio News, presented with the definitive worldwide news source, the Associated Press. Stay informed with exclusive news on all things cannabis. Cannabis Radio News, live weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, during the Russ Belville Show, or download the daily podcast exclusively on CannabisRadio.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. When breaking news happens in the cannabis industry, Cannabis Radio News delivers the details first.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We need to build a wall.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, July 13th, 2016. Cleveland, Ohio. While the Democratic Party recently adopted a platform plank supporting the legalization of marijuana, Republican Party delegates meeting in Cleveland voted against endorsement of medical marijuana. Some delegates expressed concerns about marijuana as a gateway drug, a cause of mental health issues, the drug of choice of recent mass shooters, and as part of billionaire George Soros' portfolio of social causes. The Republican Party's rejection of medical marijuana stands in stark contrast to the overwhelming public support for medical marijuana, including over two-thirds of self-identified Republicans. Phoenix, Arizona. Opponents of the campaign to legalize recreational marijuana in Arizona filed a lawsuit Monday asking a judge to bar the initiative from the November ballot. Arizonans for Responsible Drug Policy argue that marijuana legalization backers are deceiving voters while pitching the measure. The motion seeking a preliminary injunction alleges that the petition sheets distributed to voters for their signatures are invalid because they omit information about the initiative's full effect. Election officials are still verifying whether the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol submitted the 150,000 valid signatures needed to qualify for the ballot. The group says it collected more than 250,000 signatures and submitted the petitions June 30th to the Arizona Secretary of State's office. Berlin, Germany. New research published in the journal Vegetation History and Archaeobotany finds that humans used marijuana in Europe and East Asia as early as 10,000 years ago. Researchers also found a sharp increase in cannabis cultivation and use beginning around 5,000 years ago at the start of the Bronze Age. Archaeologists note that the trade routes across Europe and Asia began developing around that time, and there is some speculation that the trade in cannabis hemp helped develop those routes. Evidence points to obvious uses of cannabis for food and fiber, as well as ceremonial use as a psychoactive substance. Billings, Montana. The state health department has reduced the fee it charges to obtain or renew a Montana medical marijuana card from $75 a year to $5. Montana had about 13,000 medical marijuana cardholders in June, down from a high of about 30,000 in 2011. Beginning on August 31st, Montana medical marijuana caregivers will be limited to 3 patients. However, in November, voters may be asked to consider 2 related initiatives, one that would lift the 3-patient restriction and another that would repeal the medical marijuana law. Supporters say they have gathered enough signatures, but neither initiative has been confirmed for the ballot. Baltimore, Maryland. The state of Maryland will announce the 15 marijuana growers selected for medical marijuana licenses early next month. The August 5th deadline is some 6 months later than original projections to have licenses awarded in February. More than 1,000 investors applied for the coveted licenses, which are being ranked by Towson University's Regional Economic Studies Institute. Licenses for 94 dispensaries to distribute medical marijuana will not be determined at that time. Once licenses are issued, it is expected there will be another 6-month wait before patients are able to access medical cannabis. Honolulu, Hawaii. Patients have more options to gain access to Hawaii medical marijuana now that nurses can certify people for the use of cannabis, a change advocates say was needed because there's a shortage of doctors willing to do the certification. Hawaii's governor signed the bill Monday, updating the state's medical marijuana dispensary law. State law allows medical pot shops to open July 15th, but many dispensary owners say they won't be ready before the end of the year because they haven't had enough time since licenses were awarded in April. Olympia, Washington. The Washington Poison Center has revealed a new icon to warn children about marijuana edibles. The graphic is a red hand raised in a stop gesture with the large words, "Not for Kids," to the right of the hand. The logo also contains the toll-free number for the Poison Center. The logo was designed after Poison Center had suggested the use of the Mr. Yuck symbol for marijuana edibles. Critics charged that a child seeing an adult eating something with that symbol on it would dilute its effectiveness when used on poisonous substances. Rules requiring the new symbol take effect on January 17, 2017. All marijuana shops in Washington would have 90 days to clear their shelves of marijuana edibles lacking the symbol. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, July 13, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles. Today, folks, we take a look at the state of Colorado, where new sales figures have been released for the month of May. They give us $37.7 million sold in the month of May in Colorado from medical marijuana and $60.85 million from recreational or adult use marijuana. That's nearing $100 million in sales. What is that? 98.5 million in sales, almost $100 million in sales. And it represents the fourth highest total. There have been 3 months greater, and those all topped $100 million in sales. The monthly marijuana sales set a record in April of 2016 at $117.4 million. That, of course, the 420 holiday helps a lot in that case. So the addition of these May sales of almost $100 million means that Colorado marijuana shops have sold more than $486 million of product in the first 5 months of 2016. So we're closing in on $500 million worth of sales in the state of Colorado. Keep in mind, in 2015, the state overall for the entire year sold $996 million worth of marijuana products, and damn near close to $1 billion. This year, we are very likely to be over $1 billion in sales in Colorado alone. And this is showing the sales of marijuana throughout 2015, again, $996 billion. The recreational total for 2015 was $587 million. $587 million. They're already at $307 million 5 months into 2016. Medical marijuana, $408 million in 2015. They're at $178 million through 5 months in 2016. So it would seem to me that the major amount of growth happening here year to year in the Colorado marijuana market is not from the medical consumers, but from the recreational consumers. Now, this is having an effect all throughout the country as well. As states continue to look at Colorado as the example, and good thing they are, they don't look at Washington very often, but they find that flower, edibles, and concentrate sales in the month of May, again, just looking at the month of May, contributed $14.5 million in taxes to the state of Colorado. And considering this 5 months, this first 5 months of 2016, that's $71.4 million in tax revenue and licensing fees for these entities. This becomes an argument that is harder and harder for other states to resist. It's also an argument with some level of diminishing returns. Colorado is certainly experiencing some of this increase in the recreational marijuana sales totals thanks to out-of-state visitors. The tourism figures have already come through and shown us a great increase in tourism in Colorado since the legalization of marijuana. Almost half of the people who plan trips to Colorado say that legal marijuana factored into their decision. So the money that's coming in for Colorado is the kind of money that's only going to be coming into the first few states that legalize. Right now, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska have this special tourism draw thanks to being the only places that have legal marijuana. After 2016, we'll see California legalize. Arizona and Nevada, the entire West Coast and Southwest, will be a legal marijuana region. We will also see Massachusetts and Maine legalize, providing another area of the country for people to experience legal marijuana. A lot of those tourists who might come from New York or Pennsylvania or somewhere on the East Coast to make their way to Denver for 420 may find themselves making their way to Boston or Portland, Maine for 420 in the years to come. So it's only the first few states that pass this legalization that are going to get that benefit of the tourism dollars. And as more states have legalized, the late states that get into the game aren't going to have that same sort of tourism. And by then, the price of marijuana will have dropped
will have dropped so low, there'll be less tax revenue to be reaping from it. So get in on the game while the getting's good.
I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Well, not quite, but... Well, folks, it's 420 in Denver, Colorado, where they're celebrating almost $500 million in sales already. Well over $500 million once you get the numbers from June, I'm sure. Shout out to Lively Libra, the former Lively Libra Lisa, who's out there in Colorado slinging buds in the mountains. We're going to take a break. Be right back after this.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in cannabisradio.com.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show. Tennessee's Congressman Steve Cohen.
Well, you know, if marijuana is a gateway drug, then kissing is a gateway activity to sexual addiction.
U.S. Representative Jared Polis.
Yes, we really have a growing group of representatives that support decriminalization.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today in the rant, we want to take a look at a story coming out of Brooklyn, New York, where 33 people were hospitalized in one day thanks to what is being blamed on synthetic marijuana, spice, K2. We've talked about it before on the show. And it's available over the counter in head shops all over New York and all over the country. Even though it's been banned in many places, it's the kind of situation where the bans are hard to enforce. Basically, what we've got here is a synthetic cannabinoid, and it was developed by John W. Huffman. He was a scientist in the 1990s, a chemist, who was trying to find ways to mimic natural cannabinoids, phytocannabinoids, what we find in the plant, THC and CBD and so forth. Now, why would he be spending the time to do such a thing? Well, because marijuana is a Schedule I drug. So a researcher who would normally want to just experiment with some cannabis to determine how it would affect human brains and human behavior can't do that without going through a huge amount of Schedule I red tape. In fact, more red tape for cannabis than you'll find for any other Schedule I drug. The United States government at the National Institutes of Drug Abuse and their pot farm at the University of Mississippi are the only provider of Schedule I cannabis for research in the United States. There are numerous providers
of Schedule 1 LSD or Schedule 1 PCP or Schedule 1 psilocybin that you can get a hold of if you're a researcher, but only one place you can get your marijuana from. And as we've reported in the past, it's some pretty swaggy marijuana at that. So because we can't, because a scientist can't get a bag of marijuana, even though a teenager probably can, but because a scientist can't get a bag of marijuana, they got to find some other way of experimenting with cannabinoids. And that's where John W. Huffman comes in the 90s. He comes up with some compounds that mimic phytocannabinoids. And there's a whole bunch of these. They all have numbers based on his initials, JWH, John W. Huffman, JWH-018, JWH-239, and so forth. And what's going on here is that you take a molecule that is similar in structure to a cannabinoid, and you tweak it here or there. A little tweak on this bond or a tweak with that salt. And before you know it, you've got a different compound that is technically, under the law, not cannabis. See, when they ban these substances in the Controlled Substances Act, they have to say exactly what they are. You can't just say weed is banned. You have to say chemical THC is banned and chemical CBD is banned and so forth. So if you take chemical THC and you flip a switch on it here or there in the bonds of the molecule, you no longer have a THC molecule. And so these synthetics have been used for years and years to mimic cannabis. But there's where the differences start to come in. The other thing that you do when you're making a synthetic molecule for lab tests is you want to make sure that it works quickly and that it works effectively. In a sense, these synthetic cannabinoids are turbocharged types of cannabinoids. If you think of your body and your brain having endocannabinoid receptors, and that these endocannabinoid receptors are activated by our endogenous cannabinoids, the anandamide in our system, think of that as a tickle, right? Like when the anandamide in your body hits that receptor, it goes tickle, 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 tickle. Okay. Now, phytocannabinoids, like what we find in pot, you know, the THC and stuff, when those hit your receptors, it's more of a caress. A little more pressure than a tickle, man. You can feel it, right? That's why we get high on THC. We don't really get high on our body's natural endocannabinoids. Except, I mean, we do. You experience the runner's high, for example, is an endocannabinoid high. But generally speaking, the endocannabinoids are a tickle and the phytocannabinoids are a caress. You know, a little more. Well, in that analogy, synthetic cannabinoids are somewhere between a slap in the face and a knockout punch. They're designed to really agonize your receptors. Really just turn those suckers on. And so they're made for research. They're made for doping up mice and rats. They're not made for human consumption. And the other thing that's problematic with these is because they are illegal, they're unregulated. And so you get Chinese chemists cooking up batch after batch, spraying them on some unknown sort of plant material. And the spraying of this batch on the plant material is inconsistent. So it might be heavily soaked on one bud, but not heavily soaked on another. It could be a particular JWH this time around versus a different JWH the next time around. That's why you have this area in Brooklyn where the homeless population, the down and out, have been using this synthetic pot for a while now because it's cheap. It's like a buck for a hit there. You can get a $10 bag at a head shop. A bag of real pot goes for $350 in New York. Synthetic, you can get it for $50 online, $10 on the street. And this is why this population that's been using it for a while hasn't really been exhibiting any problems with it until the other day, when suddenly 33 of them go into full-on pot zombie mode or collapsing in the streets requiring ambulances to take them away. Because they got a bad batch. They've always been smoking and using the K2 or the Spiced or whichever one it is. This time around, looks like they got a bad batch. Just like you'd see a bout of Salmonella or E. coli from bad or a dirty restaurant. Same kind of idea here. They got a bad batch of the K2.
And this ends up putting him in the hospital. And this, of course, leads to the New York tabloids running all these scare headlines about pot zombies and the synthetic pot overdoses and all of the type of framing that makes things worse for our side. According to one resident, they said it looked like a scene out of The Walking Dead. Pairs of police officers walked the blocks around Broadway and Myrtle Avenue, checking the vital signs of men they found unconscious, the New York Times reported. Anyone who was unresponsive was loaded onto a stretcher and taken away in an ambulance. So the most glaring and obvious solution to this is the legalization of marijuana. A Rolling Stone report that I'm reading on this says, would legalizing marijuana curb the epidemic? Well, duh. John W. Huffman himself said making real marijuana legal would drive down the demands for the chemical drug. Nobody wants to smoke the K2. They would prefer the real thing if they could get it. New York City Councilman Corey Johnson made the point that some people smoke K2 to avoid a positive drug test result for marijuana, a much safer drug. This is another reason that we should be taxing and regulating marijuana rather than criminalizing it and driving people to alternatives like K2, end quote. Well, I'd like to have that sort of optimism, but legalizing marijuana alone isn't going to do that. It's going to be legalizing marijuana followed by the ending of the prejudice against marijuana consumers. Here in Portland, Oregon, one of the most legal places on the planet, employers still have the right to fire you or not hire you if there are marijuana metabolites in your urine. So legalization hasn't stopped some people from being driven to K2, even here on the West Coast. And what a damn shame it would be to have a negative experience with K2 or spice living in a state with legal marijuana. Legality itself is not the magic bullet that solves these problems. We need to keep fighting to make sure that we get equality, not just legality, but equality. That we end this prejudice and double standard and separate but equal status for cannabis consumers. We deserve lounges to smoke in. We deserve jobs. We deserve health care. We deserve child custody. We deserve medical procedures. Our use of cannabis should be of no more interest to an employer, to a school, to the government, than someone's use of beer. It's a shame we have to have people go into the ER for K2 overdoses before people start coming to their senses and recognizing that only legality solves this problem. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the all-star Canadian marijuana activism panel, Jody Emery, Mark Emery, Dana Larson, Mark Hayden, and Kirk Tusaw.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games?
consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
And now the first of five-part panel from the All-Star Canadian Weekend.
All right. It's time for our final panel of the day, legalization and public activism. I would like to introduce our moderator, Jamie Shaw. Jamie is both a former director and former staff at the BC Compassion Club Society, where her work was comprised of various roles, including communications, beginning in 2012. Jamie has also served three terms on the board of directors at the Canadian Association of Medical Cannabis Dispensaries, CAMCD, two and a half of those as president. Her successful lobbying in Vancouver led not only to the city implementing licensing for dispensaries under prohibition, but also to the creation of a second class of licensing based heavily on the BCCS model. I apologize for that, Jamie. And requiring membership in CAMCD. She's also the co-founder of the first Canadian chapter of Women Grow in Vancouver and a writer for the Cannabis Resource website, Canleo.
That's okay.
There we go. Please welcome Jamie and our panel.
Thank you. My panel looks to be a little light at the moment, but I do see Kirk. So we will start with Kirk Tusa.
The virtue of being on time.
Exactly. Kirk Tusa is a barrister and advocate for law reform. His primary practice areas are medical cannabis regulatory compliance, cannabis criminal defense, and strategic litigation. In addition to the daily practice of law, Kirk sits on the boards of the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, Normal Canada, MAPS Canada, and the Sensible BC Society. Kirk has written and spoken extensively on issues related to drug policy. You're not going to take a seat? It's a panel discussion.
Oh, it's a panel.
I thought we each had five. Well, you may have the whole time. I don't say. So Kirk has written and spoken extensively on issues related to drug policy, privacy, religious freedom, and criminal justice policy. He has testified several times before the House of Commons and the Senate and litigated the first medical cannabis case to be heard by the Supreme Court of Canada. Kirk Tusa.
Dana, bravo, Kirk.
Next, we have Jody Emery. Jody is a political activist, public speaker, and longtime marijuana legalization advocate. Together with her famous activist husband, Mark Emery, who's not sitting next to her, she owns and operates cannabis culture stores, cannabis culture vapor lounges, cannabis culture news, and Pot TV. Jody is invited to speak at a variety of conferences and rallies in Canada and the United States, and is regularly featured in mainstream media stories about cannabis, prohibition, and legalization. She's also often asked to provide media commentary on other topics, including policing, taxation, war, and the environment. Jody has run for provincial office four times, including two BC Green Party election bids. In 2014, she campaigned for the Federal Liberal Party of Canada nominations in Vancouver East. Jody Emery. Next to Jody is Mark Hayden. He's an adjunct professor at the University of British Columbia and teaches in the UBC School of Population and Public Health, Nursing, Social Work, and Medicine. He is the chair of the board of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, MAPS Canada. He has published on the issue of drug control policy in the following journals: Canadian Journal of Public Health, International Journal of Drug Policy, Encyclopedia of Public Health, Harm Reduction Journal, and Open Medicine. Mark has worked for the Addiction Services for 28 years and currently works with the Health Officers Council of British Columbia on their position papers on the issue of a regulated market for all currently illegal drugs. He was awarded the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal for drug policy reform work in 2013. And he's also someone I quote extensively whenever I'm talking to parent groups or school boards. Mark Hayden. Sorry, they're not sitting in order, so I'm going to go all over the script here. Next, we have Dana Larson. Dana is a well-known Vancouver cannabis activist, businessman, and politician. He served 10 years as editor of Cannabis Culture magazine, is the co-founder of the Vancouver Seed Bank, founder of the Vancouver Dispensary Society, and was vice president of the Canadian Association of Medical Cannabis Dispensaries. Larson was a founding member of the BC Marijuana Party and the Canadian Marijuana Party. In 2003, he joined the NDP, running as an NDP candidate in 2008. In 2011, he ran for leadership of the BC NDP. Larson is also founder and director of Sensible BC, Canada's largest grassroots cannabis reform organization. Larson is the author of several books, including Harry Pothead and the Marijuana Stone, and the recently released Green Buds and Hash, as well as the Illustrated History of Cannabis in Canada. And last but certainly not least, we have Mark Emery, the world-famous Prince of Pot. He's known for his essential involvement in the marijuana movement since 1991. He helped make marijuana books and magazines legal in Canada, sold bongs and vaporizers when it was illegal to do so, created Cannabis Culture magazine, founded Pot TV, and campaigned in elections at all levels of government since 1980. Mark is most recognized for selling marijuana seeds to the United States and worldwide when no one else would, donating millions of dollars to political groups, election campaigns, court cases, and activist organizations. He was freed from the U.S. federal prison in 2014 after being extradited in 2010 and now operates his cannabis culture stores and vapor lounges, Cannabis Culture News, and Pot TV with his wife, Jody. Welcome, Mark. So this panel discussion is, the title of it is actually two topics and not one, and each topic probably could have had its own panel, and I could literally listen to each one of these people speak for at least 2 hours, so we're going to have a bit of a problem getting this into 20 minutes, especially when I'm going to start off by talking about my bracelet. One of the links in this bracelet says I read banned books, and all of the other links in it are cover art from books that have been banned. So to start off our conversation, Mark Emery, you were an activist as a bookstore owner in London, Ontario. So how would you define what is an activist?
An activist who does something on principle and without any personal gain. So I've always said you're not an activist if the police charge you and you try and defend yourself in court because you're looking after your own survival. You know, your own personal interest is very much at stake. So when we advocate for a principle that we do not gain by, that's activism. Now, sometimes we do gain by it. So, you know, that's when we have to question how much is self-interest and how much is actual public interest.
Thank you. That actually was going to ask this question later, but that leads into it fairly well. In cannabis, public activism and civil disobedience often go hand in hand with some sort of business or monetary gain. When Mark was sentenced to jail in the United States, Jody, you picked up both of those responsibilities, both the activism and the business. How do you see the balance between those two, between the business interests and activism?
Part of what inspired me about Mark's activism when I first found out about him was that he was not ashamed to say that you need to make money to make a difference. No charity can help anyone who's poor or hungry if they don't have money. No political party can do any political activity without donations and money. Everything we require from all of us here, we all pay rent, we buy food, we all need money. And money is required to do good, just as money is used to do evil. So money itself isn't bad, but a lot of people let their desire for money allow them to compromise their principles and morals to do bad things. But there are a lot of people in this world who have money and make money to give away, to do good with. Like all these social events and fundraisers, you know, these black tie events that I haven't ever been to and many of us haven't, but at least they're using money to give to something, and the something that gets the money needed it. So using a business to create money to finance a cause, but also to pay your own bills and keep a roof over your head, isn't something to be ashamed of. In fact, it's required. A broke activist can't really do much except use free public Wi-Fi to post on Facebook or to do something on their own with their limited means. But if you're not able to create funds and money, you're not going to actually be able to print handouts. You're not going to be able to buy medical marijuana to sell to people who need it. You're not going to be able to do anything without money. And that's why so many groups here are nonprofit, but they seek money because without that money, they can't do the good that they do. So business is required for activism to be successful. And a lot of people find their own personal freedom and liberty through being self-employed and creating a business and hiring others. For myself, running our lounge, I have 36 employees in our lounge store, media, and seeing some of them come up with their own little side business, and they're making money selling a product, and they're branding, and they're partnering with friends, and that's a wonderful thing. And wouldn't we all be so lucky to benefit from the economic freedom that marijuana can provide us all, and which is also required at this time to change the laws so we can have that freedom.
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll have more from the Cannabis Hemp Expo's All-Star Canadian Activism Panel. We'll hear from Dana Larson from Sensible British Columbia and from Mark Hayden, the public policy professor, his suggestions as to how he'd like to see cannabis, caffeine, and alcohol and tobacco regulated. That's coming up right after we take this short break. We still have to pay some of the bills, and we encourage you to visit our sponsors. Even just click on their website to let them know you're out here. You don't have to buy nothing. But if you feel like buying something, please do. We're back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, let the marijuana llama tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot-proofed by the man who run High Times. Oh, yeah? Get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know? Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
As it relates to my brother, there's one thing I know for sure. He kept us safe.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Hey, everybody. It's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
We're going... going to actually talk a little bit right after. I'm going to do Kirk first. Because we're going to come back to activism a little bit. But the other half of the title was legalization. So we're going to come back to, we'll go a little bit more into legalization and then kind of come back and marry the two together. One of the proudest moments in my life, actually, was reading Justice Phelan's ruling and seeing that my testimony had actually affected him. Being able to affect a judge like that is something that Mr. Tussaud makes a career out of. So, Kirk, you wanted to kind of talk a little bit about home growing and how that fits within basically the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, in particular Section 7.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie, and thank you for your testimony, and Allard. And I just want to take a moment to recognize the people that have pioneered this industry. You saw some of them on the panel immediately before this one, who put their liberty at risk every day in order to advance social acceptance of cannabis and medical cannabis in order to advance political and legal goals. We hear a lot of discussion now about what legalization is going to look like, legislation anticipated in the spring of 2017, and I wanted to just make a few comments on home production or personal production of recreational or adult-use cannabis and how that fits into the charter. I think there's a general misunderstanding of what the charter analysis looks like. Because we talk about whether there's a right to grow at home or a right to grow medical cannabis at home, and that's really the wrong question. And it's the wrong question for this reason. In a free and democratic society that is committed to principles of individual autonomy and maximizing individual choice, the starting point is not what they will allow you to do. The starting point is liberty and what constrains the government's ability to restrict your liberty. Canada is not a parliamentary democracy any longer. Canada is a constitutional democracy with the enshrinement of the Charter. And Section 7 of the Charter says to government, it's a restriction on government conduct. It says to the government that you are not entitled to infringe the life, the liberty, or the security of the person of any Canadian citizen unless you do so in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. Now, that's a pretty heavy phrase, so let's unpack it a little bit. The analysis in the courts are, number one, can you demonstrate on a balance of probabilities that your rights have been infringed? And so let's look at the case of a legal cannabis environment in which there's a criminal prohibition still in place on growing for yourself, growing this plant for yourself. Clearly, your liberty interests have been infringed because there is a criminal prohibition restricting your individual conduct. That's the case anytime there's a criminal prohibition that restricts any of your individual conduct. So the rights infringement portion of the analysis, the first part where you ask, has liberty been infringed, has to be answered in the positive anytime there's a criminal prohibition. I would go further to say there's also a restriction on your security of the person. Your security of the person is what protects your ability to make autonomous choices about things that are serious and important to you as an individual. It's your conception of what the good is in your own life. And I say that when you're criminally restricted from growing this plant, your security of the person is also implicated. So let's ask then what the second part of the analysis is. Does that restriction accord with the principles of fundamental justice? Now, what are they? Very interestingly, the first case of the Supreme Court of Canada to determine Section 7 and its relationship to cannabis was the Malma Levine, Clay, and Cain case. David was up here earlier. He's one of the early warriors on this, and as he said, he represented himself in the Supreme Court of Canada. Video's available online. He did a great job. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court of Canada did not find that simple possession, the ban on simple possession, offended the Charter. The difference, though, is that since that decision, there's been a fairly significant development in the law about what we understand the principles of fundamental justice to be. And so in the context of a criminal prohibition, those principles of fundamental justice are, is the law arbitrary? Well, what does that mean? It means, does the law achieve its purpose, or does, in fact, it act contrary to its purpose? The purpose of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act is the protection of public health and safety. That was found by the Supreme Court of Canada in the Smith case. It was confirmed by the federal judge in Allard. And so what we were able to demonstrate in Allard, with Jamie's help and the help of many other people, is that the MMPR restricted individual liberty, and it did so in a manner that actually made people's health worse. It actually impacted their safety and their health in a negative way. Well, a law that is designed to protect public health and safety, but in fact has the opposite result, is arbitrary. And so I would say to you that a restriction on personal production of cannabis in an otherwise legal environment is arbitrary, because the only outcome of that restriction, that criminal restriction, is a negative impact both on the individual's health and safety and on the public health and safety, because the activity will be driven underground and into the black market. There's another principle of fundamental justice known as overbreadth. That's when a law, otherwise rational on its face, in any individual circumstance goes too far. And again, we saw that in Allard. Yes, it's true that you can grow cannabis quite dangerously. That does occur from time to time. But for any individual person, you can grow it perfectly safely with no detrimental impacts either to your own or to communities' health and safety. And so for each individual plaintiff in Allard, the government was unable to demonstrate that the purpose of the statute, protection of health and safety, was implicated in that person's case, and therefore the law was also overbroad. There's a third principle called the principle of gross disproportionality, which stands for the basic proposition that the punishment can't be grossly more severe than the harm to be prevented. And I would say that if you can go to the store and buy cannabis, if you can have a business selling cannabis and making money lawfully in a social use or adult use way, how then can you visit the criminal consequences, including jail, locking human beings in cages, on people who are growing that self-same plant at home with no risk to others for their own personal consumption? I say you can't do that and have a law that is consistent with Section 7 of the Charter. And so when we talk about what legalization might look like, and I hear the government may or may not be considering home production, the reality is if there's no home production, if there's no right to produce this plant for yourself, not for commercial purposes, but for yourself or for non-commercial trading with your friends like you can with all manner of other things, then it's not truly legalization, and the lawsuit will be filed the day after the law is brought into effect, and we'll have to go back to court and fight for these rights as we have so many times over the past 20 years on this issue. So I hope not to have to do that, quite frankly, but I'm certainly ready to do it if it becomes necessary to do so, and I believe we would win.
I've always had a bit of a problem with the public health arguments, not that I feel that they're not important, but that I feel that they overly focus on the harms and they don't really consider possible benefits very much. So trying to balance real public health concerns against imaginary public health concerns and how that was going to fit into legalization. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Funny that you ask. Sure, I'd like to comment on both what Kirk and Jody have said. There's a number of issues coming down the federal government pipe at us that I'd love to look at from the public health perspective. So should the dispensaries be part of the next system is a very interesting question. And the public health argument essentially says yes. But the reason for it is an interesting one. There's an author out there named Wilkinson who wrote a book called The Spirit Level that did a wonderful analysis of social problems in our society, everything from low birth weight babies to murder rates to addiction rates. And what he said is one of those compelling drivers of problems in all societies is inegalitarianism, which means the distance between the rich and the poor. If you have a society that concentrates wealth at the top of the pyramid, it tends to be a very sick society, and you have many social problems resulting from that. So if we build a system that sells cannabis that concentrates money at the top of the pile, we will have a sicker society than if we spread the money around. So the dispensaries, by definition, tend to be very small. They're individuals, people sitting at the table, or small groups of people. They're not large multinational corporations. And so in a public health argument, you'd keep the existing dispensaries, you'd require them to stay relatively small, and you'd have lots of them. That's an egalitarian argument.
That's a great idea, if you ask me. That's Professor Mark Hayden speaking on the All-Star Canadian Marijuana Activism Panel at the Cannabis Hemp Expo. It took place this weekend in Vancouver, British Columbia. We've got the last half of that panel coming up in three parts in hour two. You'll hear more from Jody Emery, Mark Emery, Dana Larson, Mark Hayden, and Kirk Tusaw, moderated by Jamie Shaw. That's all the time we got for hour one, though. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. Hour two is next, and in the beginning of hour two, we're going to tell you a little bit about why Big Pharma doesn't want to see legal cannabis anytime soon. New data confirms what we've always known. They don't like the competition.
For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.